T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
The 50th anniversary of the league. 49 of the 50 players selected as the league's greatest are alive. Only Pete Maravich has passed away. 47 of the 50 are here.
Ladies and gentlemen, please direct your attention to the court and welcome the 50 greatest NBA players of all time. From the Los Angeles Lakers, number 22, Elgin Baylor.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Yeah, you bet one of the 50 greatest.
Yeah.
Probably a smaller number than that, right? When we're talking about this guy, we're talking about absolutely the cream of the crop. It is 670 The Score. You're listening to The McNeil and Parkin Show. We are live at Bandit at 841 West Randolph. Thank you to Budweiser. I'm Matt Spiegel. He's David Haw. And Kendall Gill is here with us, co-hosting as well, and a pleasure now to welcome to The Score better than the top 50. What do we go, top 20? We go top 15?
Top 20.
Top 20, says Kendall. We welcome in Elgin Baylor, the legendary Elgin Baylor, right now to 670 The Score. Elgin, good afternoon. Welcome to Chicago Radio. We're pretty excited to have the All-Star Game here the whole weekend, and now excited to have you on the air. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you very much. I'm excited, wanted to see this thing and watch it, see what's happening now.
Hang Time, My Life in Basketball, is Elgin's memoir. It's in stores now. And, the game now filled with wings who are explosive athletically. When you were doing it, Elgin, you were way ahead of your time in terms of that skill set, being able to handle the ball. And people thought of you as a forward, but you were out on the perimeter an awful lot. Do you ever think about what you brought to the game and how that might translate to the game these days?
No, I think about it, just my ex-teammates, run into them a lot, and we talk about times, we played and things. But, I have some old, records and stuff like that, and film and stuff I can look at and just reminisce.
Elgin, here in Chicago, the Bulls are struggling a bit. And as somebody who was in the front office for the Clippers for 22 years, you endured your share of struggles as well. And so the perseverance that it requires an executive to get a franchise through some of these tough times, is it relatable to what John Paxson, who has been here for 16 years, is going through? And would you have any advice for John Paxson or Gar Forman or Michael Reinsdorf is trying to dig their way out of this rut?
No, right now it would be, very difficult. I hadn't talked to any of those guys, and it's been a little while, see them, and I hadn't really been following them to see what was going on. But, just what you had mentioned, I've heard other, people mention, little things that's going on right now. So I'm really not, don't know exactly all the, details.
Well, what was it like for you, though, Elgin, to be in charge of the Clippers for as long as you were, those 22 years? And sometimes the seasons were lean, and you had to make difficult decisions about whether to get rid of guys or whether to try and build and augment from there. How hard is it, and how hard was it for you to try and build a winner in the NBA?
Well, it was very, very difficult, and appreciate some players, and they tried as hard as they could, working with me, trying to make everything work. And, it was tough, being able to get players, and certain players for some reason, didn't particularly want to come, play for the Clippers. They've had problems with management and thing. And it was a difficult time. It was not easy, But, it was a great bunch of guys, I played with, and I, really appreciated the fact that, that I did get an opportunity to get the job that I did get. And just, as things went on, I really appreciate it.
What teams do you like to watch today in the NBA around the league, and what players do you appreciate the way they played and you think that they could have played in any era?
Well, I really haven't really watched it. that much. But I mean, the player, I think it would be, you know, any area, you know, player I like, you know, is one player that I, and when the first time I saw this kid play, you know, I said, gee, I was, you know, amazed. And then I saw him several more times, and I say, which was unbelievable, but this player could play me. And I told the guy, I said, gee, well, first time I saw him, talked to him, the other guy that was with me, I said, man, that guy could play every position. And talking about LeBron James, I mean, he's a freak of nature. I don't know what you call him. He's just amazing. He's amazing. He could play every position.
Yeah, no, and history will say that's the case. In the finals, as a Cavalier, he led the finals in every one of the five stats, Elgin, with steals and rebounds and everything, which, to your point. Could you have played every position? And did you sometimes? You ever play center?
Sometimes I did. You know, when guys got injured, we had a lot of guys that were injured, and I had to play other positions, you know, the you know, what they call it. Power forward, you know, different names they give it. But, yeah, I had to play that position, check bigger guys. But, you know, I wasn't that too much to me. My thinking was a disadvantage because I was, you know, pretty strong and stuff like that. And then the guy that's checking me, he's going to have a problem because I'm going to be a lot quicker and everything. So they put different players on me to guard me. And so happened, I came through.
Talking with Laker legend Elgin Baylor. And Elgin, obviously, it's been a difficult month since the death of Kobe Bryant, and to know that you had a special relationship with Kobe through the years as fellow Laker legends, and just wondered how special it will be this weekend as the NBA pays tribute to him before this All-Star game, and just how you've been coping the last month in your grief.
Well, you know, with Kobe, you know, because I, you know, spent a lot of time seeing Kobe and talking to Kobe and play around and thing like that. And we would talk and just kid around. But I've never seen anybody like Kobe with a, you know, talking about a killer instinct. He wanted to win, you know, every game. I mean, think about it. I've never seen anybody work as hard. And, he, you know, everything he would think he needs to do, he would go out there and do it to improve his skills. And was he, you know, he was just unbelievable just to be with him, just watch him. You know, he plays hard. He goes out there, gives 100%, you know. And I have, you know, contact with him occasionally. You know, I watched him when they would work out and things. And, you know, it's just sorry to see, you know, what happened. You know, I was just shocked, you know. I was just shocked, man. And he was, you know, to me, you know, I just was really impressed with the guy because he got out there and he was a winner. You know, he played as hard as anybody I've ever seen play, you know. And with me, you know, think about it, he was treating me like I was his dad or something. He was so respectful and everything else, and it was fun, you know, to get with him and talk to him, man, and talk about the game and thing. And he had some of the great moves, and I was, you know, talking to him about it. And every time I'd see him, he would talk to me about moves. He said, well, I got that from you. I got that from you every time you make a move if I'm around, which was pleasing, you know. I appreciate that.
What was the move that Kobe says he got from Elgin Baylor? I'm curious. Got to try and look back on that and figure it out.
You just can't tell somebody. Just, you got to actually go out there and do it. You know, you got to get to do your body movement. You know, just to tell you to do it. Only way you can do that is have the player there, and then you there. Then you can show him the moves. You can't just tell him, you know, phone just like that. No, impossible.
Was Kobe the greatest Laker ever?
He was the greatest Laker ever. Now, I don't know who was the greatest Laker ever. You know, I mean, had some great. Kobe was a great player. We had some other good players on our team. So, I mean, I don't know. Really get into that because when you say that, you know, this guy's that, then you start getting all these phone calls. And I don't want to do that. Kobe was a great player, and we had fun together, and was, you know, thank God, you know, he was the Lord.
Well, you know, it's nice of you to join us, and especially we know we're pulling you away from your wife on Valentine's Day, right, Elgin? We apologize for pulling you away from her.
Well, that's okay. She doesn't mind.
you can tell her a happy Valentine's Day right now if you want to use
well,
her
well,
time.
Well, listen, she's right here. Huh? She said, happy Valentine's Day.
There we go.
Oh, I'm supposed to say it to her. I got it. Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day, honey. I'm supposed to tell her. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, but we appreciate it for us, too. That's helpful. Elgin, thanks so much, man. We appreciate
thanks, Elgin.
The time.
Oh, you're certainly welcome anytime.
All right, you got it. It's Elgin Baylor, Hang Time, My Life in Basketball. It must be nice to have a franchise that can just sort of point up to the rafters and say, all right, now it's your turn, LeBron. Like, that made all the sense in the world. Made all the sense in the world for LeBron to go there, like Wilt did for the back half of his career. Like, so many other players, like Shaq did for part of his career. It's like, must be nice to have that as a franchise.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that the worst hidden secret that is that LeBron was going to L.A.
Everybody knew it, right?
Everybody knew that, even when he was in Cleveland for the last year. But, you know, I don't know whether there's been a player to come to the Lakers this late in their career, still in their prime. And I think that LeBron is still in his prime at 34 years old.
It's such a great franchise, Kendall. I can't imagine any NBA veteran free agent going to Los Angeles and saying no to the Lakers. But I think that I'm sitting next to one who did just
that.
Great
segue. Great segue. Yeah. So I had the opportunity to join the Los Angeles Lakers. I forget what year that was. But the deal was set where I was going to sign with the Lakers. Jerry West called me. The Phil Jackson said, listen, Glenn White, Rice, we're going to move on. Kendall, you can sign with us, move right into the starting lineup. And, you know, I was all for it because this was – my dream to play for the Los Angeles Lakers.
It was, huh?
And, yeah, one of them. The Los Angeles Lakers and Shaquille O'Neal, Phil Jackson, Kobe Bryant. So we set the deal. And before I go to the press conference, Mitch Kupchak, who was the general manager at the time of the Los Angeles Lakers, and Kurt Rambis were downstairs in the hotel. And they said, Kendall, come on down. We're going to go to the press conference. We got your jersey. So I go to the elevator. I realize I forget my cell phone. I go back into the hotel room to grab my cell phone. The cell phone rings. It's Lewis Katz, the owner of the New Jersey Nets. He goes, Kendall, we're prepared to offer you $7 million for 1 year. Now, that's chump change in today's NBA, but back then it was a lot of money.
Kendall, that was August of 2000. That was a lot of money then. It's still a lot of money now.
It's a lot of money now, but chump change in the NBA.
Okay.
Was it 2000 or 96? Before
No, it was in 2000.
August of 2000.
So,
headline of the Chicago Tribune says, Gil says he's leaving Nets to join Lakers.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's something else. And you know what? I had my mind set up. But then they gave me the Godfather offer. You know? And that was – so I immediately sit down on the bed. I put my pillow over my face, and I say words that I can't say on the radio because now I'm in this big conundrum where now either I'm going to take this money or go join Kobe and Shaq and win some championships.
Man.
So the deal was $7 million for 1 year. The Lakers' offer was 2 years, $5.5 million. And I ask people this question all the time. What would you have done?
Well, the total was $5.5 million.
The total was $5.5 million for 2 years.
For 2 years.
So basically the Nets were offering you twice as much money to go to New Jersey rather than go to the Lakers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so I go downstairs and I tell Mitch Covey, Mitch gives me the jersey, which I still have today, Gil number 12. Couldn't wear 13 because it was retired. Wilt's number is retired. But I say, look, Mitch, I got to really think about this. I mean, they just gave me an offer that, I got to think about it. I mean, because as athletes in the NBA, we have a short period of time to make as much money as we can.
Sure.
So I had to look at it. And
I understand it. It's fairly late in your career. You don't know you're going to keep playing. You played another 5 years after that.
Right. And Mitch said, listen, Kendall, he learned of the deal. He said, listen, Kendall, we'll take care of you on the back end. However, my grandfather always told me a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush.
Right.
Okay. So I fly back to Chicago, and it's still on my mind. Kobe calls me. And I still, you know, when the tragedy happened a couple of weeks ago, I remembered his voice over the phone and everything. But Kobe called me. Shaq called me. And tried to convince me, but at the end, I had to make a business decision.
It was a business decision, Kendall, and I think people understand that. But I think we talk a lot about loyalty in professional sports. And you had been with the Nets for 5 years at the point of that negotiation, at the point of that decision. How much did loyalty factor into that, maybe leaning toward going back to New Jersey?
None.
It's a business.
Look, in the NBA, there's no loyalty. I mean, you look at Andre Drummond.
Right.
He's upset about being traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he says there's no loyalty from the Detroit Pistons. They never even told me. Well, guess what? This is business, guys. I mean, and that's the one thing as a professional athlete that you have to have in your head that, you know, they send you out to the NBA Cares thing, which we do care about the community and everything. They have you do all these team events and everything. But if they get a deal, you're gone the next day. I'll tell you another story. George Shinn. When I went back to the Charlotte Hornets, came to me one game and said, listen, you never should have left Charlotte. I'm glad you're back. You should have been here your whole career. 3 days later, they traded me.
Oh, man.
Three days later. Oh, my
gosh. Traded me. So that's loyalty, man.
You know, it's one thing for fans to sort of wrap their head around. You can't get attached to a player.
Cannot.
But for you as a player to feel that. Well, don't worry. Those 2000 Lakers, they weren't, you know, they weren't much.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They did go. All right. Granted, they went to the finals and they beat Allen Iverson, Dikembe Mutombo,
and won.
And that's, you were watching, right? It's like, and that. Yeah, that's your Mark Madsen, the Stanford rookie, is dancing
that
out there.
Triangle offense that you were ideal for, right?
I was ideal for it. Yes. You know, but you know, had I had to do it all over again, I probably would have made the decision to go to the Lakers, because after you're done playing, you're looked at differently if you're a champion.
Right.
You know, I had a good career and everything, but had I won championships, I would be looked at differently. My legacy would be different.
Even if you played a smaller role on a champ like that?
Yeah, even if I played a smaller role. You know, if I had gone out there, I mean, I probably would have played the same role I played on New Jersey. You know, I didn't think of myself as demoting myself. You know, I actually thought that had I gone out there, I probably would have elevated my game, because I was playing with great players, two of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen people make the other decision. I remember when all those guys were joining the Lakers as ring chasing, right? When
Karl Malone, Gary Payton,
yeah.
That crew,
yeah. And everybody like chasing that one more. But
yeah,
Gary
eventually got one, right? In Miami, I believe. Was it?
Did Gary Payton win an NBA title?
I think he
did.
Down there at Miami at the end?
Yeah,
maybe so. But it's understandable. But maybe someday the Bulls will be that destination. The Bulls will be that one. What is it about L.A.? Is it the fact that it's L.A. and it's ridiculously warm?
The fact that it's
L.A.
is the fact that Jack Nicholson sits on the court side.
All
and
that
Brad Pitt.
Appeal, marquee attraction. Yeah. It's just everything about a Laker, the glamour life of being an NBA player for a franchise that has won as often as they have won. It's just it's almost irresistible. Your experience says it wasn't, but I can see where it would feel that way.
It's irresistible. I mean, I can remember the first time I played in the L.A. Forum. I saw Magic Johnson, who was the only player I've ever been in awe of, and it was like he had a glow around him when he walked out on the court. You remember Ty Mack in The Last Dragon? And he had the glow around him.
That's
the way Magic Johnson looked the first time I saw him. I was like, oh, that's Magic. I'm playing against Magic.
Like a player is on fire in NBA Jam with the halo going.
Right. And, you know, back then, Chick Hearn called the games, and the aura of his voice, and, you know, the aura of the L.A. Forum and the colors. I'm telling you, man, it's intoxicating.
And good memory. Gary Payton did win an NBA title with the Heat in 2006.
Yeah. Well done.
He was on that roster and on that team.
Yeah, he did.
That's
happy for him.
That's reason number 650 why we have Kendall Gill here with us on 670 The Score. It's the McNeil and Parkins Show. They're not here, but I'm here. Matt Spiegel, and he's here. David Haw doing a double today. Most excellent. Kendall Gill is here as well. And we are supposed to have a high school legend in these parts, who is now an NBA veteran, a previous winner of a competition he's in again on Saturday night. Patrick Beverly is going to come over and say hello, thanks to Budweiser and Bandit here at 841 West Randolph. Keep it here. Keep listening on 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's Valentine's Day. Let's not get uncomfortable.
Well, yes, thank you, Molly Karam from First Take, this morning for chastising those vocal Bulls fans, because it's Valentine's Day. No bad wishes on Valentine's Day.
No, not for the basketball romantic in you.
That's right. We have no bad wishes for you, only good ones. This segment brought to you by Subway here on 670 The Score. All right, here's the quiz for you, Kendall Gill, and for you, David Haw. And we're supposed to talk to Patrick Beverly, and I think we will at some point this hour. Looking forward to that. There have been 11 players who have competed in both the three-point contest and the slam dunk contest. Because Zach LaVine's about to be number 12 tomorrow night. Now, it's a fairly obscure list.
Okay.
You know, Michael Cooper, Clyde Drexler.
Mm-hmm. Terrence Stansberry?
Stansberry never did.
No.
Michael Jordan, you guys know him. Kenny Smith did it in the same year.
Oh, he did?
Damian Lillard did it in the same year, 2014.
Wow. Lillard was in the dunk?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I know, right? Same year. Nick Anderson. Your teammate was in both the three-point contest and the dunk contest.
Well, he could definitely do both.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Qualified?
Yeah, he's qualified.
Allen Houston, Brent Barry.
Allen Houston was in the dunk contest?
Allen Houston apparently was in the dunk contest.
Was that all-time awful one?
It's possible.
I think the all-time worst was Michael Finley when he tried to do the cartwheel.
Okay, that was bad. It's another Chicago legend there, Michael Finley.
Yeah, he is.
Proviso, right?
Proviso, yeah.
With Sherelle Ford on that team. And who else? Donnie Boyce.
Donnie Boyce.
Yeah. But Brent Barry did both. Bob Sura, the Florida State product, did both. Ray Allen was in the dunk contest one year.
Yeah, I remember Ray being in it.
You do?
And he was a legit dunker.
He was.
Yeah, he was a legit dunker.
And Paul George did both as well.
Hold on, Speak. You buried the lead. So you're saying that Zach LaVine, you're predicting that he's going to be a last-minute entry into the dunk contest.
Well, these are two-time dunk contest champions.
Yeah.
Here in his home city where he plays, and you guys see these videos that popped up yesterday on Twitter, somebody who was at practice, and it's when Zach was practicing for the three-point contest because the racks are there, and you could tell he just had gone through some practice. Three different preposterous dunks that Zach LaVine was working on. Three different little videos, and they've gone viral. Why is the man working on three brand new dunks as he also works on his three-point contest?
He could come out and compete in the dunk contest, and you know, I think that he wins it, you know, because of his athleticism. And I talked to you guys this off air. I worked out with him this fall before the season, and he has the type of athleticism that I've seen in maybe three or four players, and I'm talking Michael, I'm talking about Vince Carter, Zach LaVine. I think he's right there athletically with these guys.
Really? You know, you mentioned earlier, Kendall, growing up and being watching the Bulls, a big fan of Reggie Theus, a guy that could just fill it up at will and could be the guy that had all style and wasn't on a lot of good Bulls teams.
No, he wasn't.
Does Zach LaVine remind you of Reggie Theus in the way that he can score whenever you need a bucket and he can just... He could go for 40 any given night.
I think that he's a better scorer than Reggie. Reggie's a great scorer, but I think that Zach can – I mean, he had 41 in his last game. When he gets on a roll, there's nobody that could stop him. He has the ability to get to the basket because his handle is so good, because his first step is so good. And then if you play off of him, he has the ability to knock down threes from, you know, 3 or 4 feet beyond the three-point line. He's become such a good three-point shooter. Now, the next evolution of his game, if he's going to be one of the best two guards in this league, he's got to defensively get better. You know, and I've had discussions with him about this, and he's aware of it. But I think that's something that has to take time, where you have to learn how to play defense in today's game. It's different now, because you can't use your forearm. You can't be as physical as you used to be.
Now, you're talking, Kendall Gill, for those who don't know, led the league in steals one year. I think you still hold the record for most steals in a game, Kendall, with 11. But it's interesting that you bring that up, because Zach, as an offensive weapon, it's undeniable. But what would happen to his overall game if he improved on defense? Like, would that affect his offensive game?
No,
well?
I think it would enhance it.
That's what I mean, in a good way.
If he learned how to play the passing lanes the correct way, which he's doing a lot better job of this year, that adds 6 to 8 points a game because of the steals that you get. If you learn how to shut a guy down when you're supposed to, that adds points to your team defense. I mean, it takes away points from your opponent. You know, when he does these things, then he's going to step up and be one of the best two-way players in this league, and then there won't be any question whether he makes the All-Star team. You're going to be forced to put him on the team.
Okay, hold on a second. We can't just gloss over this. 11 steals?
One game.
11 steals, Kendall.
Still a record in the NBA.
When you're a scorer and you get 50, there's a point in that night where you just say, I'm feeling it, and I'm just going to fill it up. If you're, you know, have 20 assists, you see the court and things slow down, and you're delivering the right pass at the right time. What's it like when you're in the midst of a game and you have 11 steals?
Well, you know, actually, I didn't think it was that big of a deal because I had gotten 11 at Ritz Central High School before, and actually, I think I had 13. But Walt Clyde Frazier taught me how to steal the basketball better in the pros. I was already pretty good when I got there, but he told me that in the first instances of the game, never go for your steals. So I actually let three or four go by me when we played that game. And then I went for the 11. So the reason why is because you never know, and he taught me this, you never know at the end of a game, that same player that's throwing that pass at the beginning of the game is going to throw it at the end of the game.
Okay, back up, back up. So
but no,
number
hold on,
one.
But David, because that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant because it makes me think about like how, you know, in a base stealer, you got to try and read that pitcher. And maybe you don't go for a couple of times because
exactly.
You're learning.
Set them up.
Makes
exactly.
All the sense in the world. You're figuring out what their patterns are and how they do it. Let some go by.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
Though you could.
Exactly.
That's a long game right there.
Yep.
Who was it against and what was the context that Clyde Frazier was coaching you?
Well, he had told me this a couple years before that.
Okay. So
you know,
this
because he knew
like,
I was a ball hawk.
Right.
So he had the ability to see what I was doing, and he saw me trying to go for the balls early in the game.
Just doing Knicks games, broadcasting
just
at the time?
During Knicks games. I mean, the New Jersey Nets played the Knicks.
Yeah.
And then he pulled me aside after the game and told me.
That's great.
And, you know, I started using it, and it worked. And, you know, we were playing the Miami Heat. One, their offense was predictable. The best way to steal, all you young players out there, the best way to steal the basketball is when a big man has it, okay? And they always use Alonzo Mourning or some big man at the top of the key to reverse the ball to the strong, from strong side to weak. So when you have a big man that is not used to throwing passes like guards do, it's easy to steal the ball. I don't understand why guys can't steal it like, you know, I used to, because I used to set these guys up all the time. And because Pat Riley's offense was so predictable, I was able to get the steals, and I look at it, and I say, man, I could have had 14 because I let three go by me doing the Clyde Frazier philosophy.
Wait, setting them up.
See, yeah, I was setting them up, yeah.
How beautiful is that, Clyde, like, talking about that with you? Because, so former players, who else gave you good advice, Kendall, like that? And just because maybe they saw that you play the game in a certain way that they liked, they wanted to support you. Did you have those kind
Clyde
of experiences?
Yeah, Clyde Drexler, I remember playing against Clyde, and we were in Portland, and he said, you know, we were at the free throw line. He said, you know, you're my favorite rookie this year. I was like, oh, thanks, Clyde. I'm a rookie. You know, I'm wet behind the ears. You know, any knowledge I get from all of
the
all-time greats, you know, I'm gonna embrace. So he said, listen, you got to develop your jump shot. He said, you're a great athlete, but you need to start moving out in range and knocking down that shot consistently. He said, you got to take 500 a day in the summertime.
So
that's what I did. The next year I come back, and I averaged 20 points a game. And a big reason of that is because of Clyde Drexler.
Thanks, Clyde.
Yeah.
So when you're at the other end of your career and you have an opportunity and you see a rookie you might like or a young player, is there a player out there that you sort of took aside, whether it was a teammate or somebody you played against, and you gave them the same type of advice you received as a young player?
Yeah, I actually imparted my wisdom to Dwayne Wade. You know, I told him because I thought Dwayne was very similar to me. You know, I'm an older player now, and I see a lot of myself in Dwayne. And I said, yo, you can really be a great defensive player. And you know, it's all about effort. And Dwayne actually is the all-time leading block guard.
He leads for
block shots.
Yep.
So
he's brilliant.
I don't know whether he embraced what I told him. But, you know, I hope that he did, and, you know, but he hadn't given me any money yet for it. You know, he made a lot of money being a great defender, man.
Man, Kendall Gill is here with us on 670 The Score, getting a chance to hang out with Kendall this afternoon on the McNeil and Parkins show. I could hear that kind of stuff, I mean, forever. I've always loved it in baseball when it's pitchers sitting around, like, and they'll teach, even if it's opponents, they'll go ahead and teach something because there's an honor in passing that kind of stuff on, whatever you learned. But some people deserve it and some people don't, right, Kendall?
Some people deserve it. You know the guys that are willing to work hard, and you know the guys who are BSing you, you know, and that are there just strictly on talent. But you know the guys that really care about the game, really approach it in a professional way, and those are the guys that get the wisdom. You know, I think that's why Kobe elevated his game so much throughout his career, because everybody saw how passionate he was about the game, how focused he was about being the best player in the league, and people gave him knowledge. I mean, you saw with Michael on the court telling him stuff, you know. And you look at a lot of Kobe's game; it's a lot of Michael Jordan in there. You know?
So coming back to Zach LaVine, full circle here. So when you worked out with him in the summer, and you know, here's a kid. He's not a kid. He's a young man who's 24 years old, but has a lot of basketball left to play. Does he respect the fact that you played 16 years in the league, and when you are working out together or when you're talking about the game, is he asking the kind of questions that you think he's trying to gain that kind of knowledge so he gains that edge, so he benefits from your experience?
Yeah, and you don't know it until you see him on the floor trying to do it. And some of the things that I showed Zach about lunging on the defensive end instead of shuffling, something that John Calipari showed me, that's when you know that he was listening. You know, I saw him, I still see him trying to do the technique. It takes about a year to master
it. It's a defensive skill. You said shuffling, not lunging.
Yeah, don't shuffle. You have to lunge. Dennis Rodman was very good at it. And I used to use it against Michael. I used to use it against Kobe. Great players. And here's the thing about the lunge. You can get beat on the first dribble, but the lunge will allow you to catch the guy on the second dribble. I was showing my son the other day how LeBron James beat this guy from Denver off of the dribble on the wing, and the guy was shuffling his feet. That's exactly why LeBron blew past him. If the guy had lunged, he would have cut him off, and then you see the light bulb go off and whoever you're teaching their head. I saw it in this instance, my son's head. He's like, oh yeah, okay, now I can see where the lunge would help. That's what I tried to show Zach, and he's done it a couple times this year where he stopped people on the lunge, but like I said, it takes a year to really learn how to use it.
Man, and that's counterintuitive, isn't it? Because you're taught in a lot of sports to shuffle.
You're taught to shuffle, yeah.
But it really, it can throw you off, throw your balance off, and then they blow by you the other way.
Players are too good, too athletic now in order to shuffle. You have to lunge if you're going to cut a guy off.
The challenge for Zach offensively is so fascinating, isn't it? Because you mentioned the analytics that say the three-pointer is what you want, or the dunk, or nothing in between. Mm-hmm. If you're in the flow of the basketball game that you've played your entire life,
right,
and you set yourself up for, I mean, hell, we watched Michael do it forever, and all these other guys. You set yourself up for a wide-open 16-footer. That's a bad shot by the math, but that just doesn't feel right to you as a player, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't feel right, and you know what? The good players make those shots. You look at Kawhi Leonard, he'll mid-range you to death. Kawhi Leonard is probably one of the top two, top three player in the league right now. And, you know, it was evident when he took the Toronto Raptors to the championship last year. Yeah, he mixed in some three-point shots, but that wasn't the basic premise of his game. You know, his game is, I'm going to get to my spot and I am going to score. That's where Kobe did it. That's where Michael did it. That's where Kawhi did it. That's where Bernard King, if all you guys know who Bernard King did it, he got to his spot in mid-range and when he needed a bucket, and that's what happens. And I think that's a lost art now. Zach can do it, but because of the way the analytics have gone in the NBA, he doesn't do it a lot.
Defensively, did you ever get good at guarding Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I did on occasions. But, you know, you got to realize Michael was so good, man. I mean, and it wasn't exactly Michael or Scottie that I was worried about. I wanted to play against those guys. It was the triangle offense that I was worried about because you guys know I'm a big boxing guy, right? And I'm going to use this boxing analogy. Floyd Mayweather, defensively, he's waiting for you to take a shot at him so that he can go on his offensive. That's what the triangle offense was like. They're waiting to see what you do before they do what they do. And that's why it was so hard to play against it and game plan against it, because you couldn't game plan against it. And then take into account, you got two of the top 50 guys playing it. And a lot of people say that today, the triangle offense is outdated. Well, the thing is, the triangle offense, you need to have a high basketball IQ. You need to be a basketball player to play it. You can't play it with guys that only play individual basketball, because you have to think in the triangle offense. And you have to stay disciplined. Phil Jackson wrote a book, and in that book it says, all freedom exists within structure. And that's exactly what the triangle offense is. And that's why I thought that I was built to play in it. I mean, it's the greatest offense. It's only won 11 championships.
Wow. Is that all?
I don't understand. I don't understand why guys don't use it today.
Well, it's beautiful. And who knew at the time that that's what a freewheeling talent like Michael needed, was that structure?
Michael was so good, he made the fundamentals look fancy. He did. And, you know, I hear all these comparisons with LeBron, of course, and, you know, God rest his soul, Kobe. But Michael was in a class by himself. I mean, he was a freak of an athlete. He was strong. He was smart. He had a killer instinct. He had everything. Everything you want an athlete, that's what he had, you know. And you know, I can remember once. Here I go with another one of my stories.
Well, you know what? Hold on. We got to take a break. And this is gold. This is wonderful stuff we're getting a chance to do with Kendall Gill. Appreciate the time and the hang so much here on All-Star Weekend. It's The Score. It's McNeil and Parkins. He was about to tell a Michael story that we're gonna try not to listen to at the break.
Okay.
That's our job, is to save it for you on the other side right here on 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
But the one thing that players when I played were more concerned about was respect than it was being liked by your teammates, because we would cuss at each other. We would literally get in fights all the time.
Wait, Michael Jordan punched you?
Yeah, where have you been?
That's hilarious. Will Perdue has been dining out on the Michael Jordan punch me story for a long time, but he couldn't believe. Was that Mark Grody who didn't
know
the
Grody
story?
Yep.
How dare you not know that story? Will has been a lot of fun to talk to on this radio station for a while, and Kendall Gill is here today. We're having a blast with Kendall right here on 670 The Score. We are live at Bandit at 841 West Randolph, thanks to Budweiser. Budweiser, right now, $20 beer coolers here at Bandit. That's six beers for 20 bucks. I can do that math almost. That's pretty good. All weekend, mix and match with your choice of Budweiser, Bud Light, and Bud Seltzers, too. And, Kendall, you were in the middle of Michael Jordan conversation. Do you remember which story you were going to? Because I know there's a pile of them. But where were you going?
Yeah, I was going with, to his competitive spirit, is evident in this story I'm about to tell you. He came to Charlotte for some reason. I don't know why it was, but it was New Year's Eve. And he came to Charlotte to visit his family. Mm. And we all ended up, he had a friend named Adolph Shiver, who we used to hang out with. And we all ended up at my house playing cards, Tom. So we're playing all night, and I'm beating Michael, okay? I'm beating him out of his money.
Trouble.
But this guy will not let me go to sleep until he wins his money back. And we keep playing. And the thing is about him, he outlasted me. You know, it was a war of attrition, and he stayed up. And I'm like, how? Because I thought that I could stay up with the best of them, but he... 7 o'clock in the morning, he gets up, picks up his clothes. I'll never forget this. He wins his money back, walks out of the house with no shoes on, and say, "All right, man, I'll see you later." that's what a competitor he was, man. He was willing to stay up all night long until he won his money.
So, and being that kind of competitor made his teammates better, right? I mean, we talk about that kind of stuff all the time. With certain players make their teammates better, but his not just his work ethic, but fighting as hard as he did in practice all the time probably made them better.
Well, as a rule of thumb, when your best player works the hardest, then that picks up everybody else. And, I think that Michael demanded it of his teammates. I can remember when I was with New Jersey, Scott Burrell was traded to the Chicago Bulls. And, eventually we came around to play the Bulls and we came here. And, I saw Scotty in pregame warm-ups, and he goes, I said, "How you like it over here?" He's like, "Oh, man, it's okay. I'm just trying not to make Michael mad." I'm like, "Really? It's like that?" He's like, "Yeah, it's like that." Hmm. So the rumors of him ruling with an iron fist are true.
So you played against Magic. You played against Michael. You played against Kobe. You play against LeBron at the beginning of his career and the end of yours. If you had to rank, and I know that you have done this, the toughest people you've had to guard, how does 1 through 5 go?
I'm going to tell you 1 through 10,
okay?
Because I can tell you really quick.
All right, so these are the 10 most difficult people to guard that Kendall Gill has ever faced. He's a man who led the NBA in steals 1 year.
And if you guys ever want to know my reasoning why these guys were the top 10, you can go on my Instagram page, Official Kendall Gill, and read why. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So. Number 10, Mark Price.
Mark Price, number 10?
Mark Price.
Georgia Tech, sharpshooter, played for the Cavs.
I used to think he was, when I saw him play on television, I used to think that he was slow until I got out on the court with him. I mean, he had the ability to pull up and knock down the jump shot in your face, also split double teams.
Man, those are great Georgia Tech teams.
Number 9 was Magic Johnson.
Okay.
Magic Johnson was just at 6'9". He was so big, I couldn't get around him. And that's what made him hard for me to guard. Plus, he could go anywhere with the basketball.
Yeah, he'd throw his butt at you.
Throw his butt at you and do it. And I've never seen anybody have command of a team like Magic Johnson. greatest leader I've ever played against. Number eight, Allen Iverson.
Oh, yeah.
And
the crossover.
And Allen actually would have been higher on my list, but I didn't guard him a lot. I was going to say,
that's not a great matchup for you, Kevin.
Well, you know, I didn't mind it, but I mean, you know, the thing is that I played a lot of small forward when I was in New Jersey.
Gotcha.
So Kerry Kittles drew him. But at times I did guard him. His crossover was for real. He got me one of those times. Yeah. So, all right, here's one that you guys, a lot of people probably forgot. Number seven, Reggie Lewis from the Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Reggie Lewis was tough as they come, man. I mean, he was a really tough guard for me, man, because of his ability to pull up and shoot over me.
I wouldn't have thought he was in your top 10, though.
Oh, he was, man. He was tough.
Reggie Lewis with Dunbar High School with David Wingate and Muggsy Bogues and all those guys.
Number six, Vince Carter.
Oh,
okay.
He's still playing. The only guy I can think of that has aged better than you.
Is he 43?
He's got to be up there.
Man,
is he in the dunk contest? He should be.
I don't know if he can still get up there and do it, though.
But Vince was just a freak athlete. If he had, and Vince is all time great in my opinion, but if he had the competitive spirit of Kobe or Michael, it would be over. Because athletically, he was the best I've ever played against. Number five. Kobe Bryant. And the reason why I say Kobe is because Kobe, every year he came back with something different to his game. Like, you think you got a guy pegged, okay, he's going to do this. The next year he'd have something different to go to.
And became a dangerous three-point shooter.
Man. All right, now, number four is going to surprise you.
Okay.
It's Reggie Miller.
Reggie Miller, number four.
Oh, because you got to chase. Nobody ran
exactly.
Around
but couldn't
like
you get
that.
Physical with Reggie Miller?
No, you couldn't get physical with him because the Davis boys were there to punish you. After.
Those were the days. You can do that back in that,
listen,
era.
Before I played against Reggie Miller, I used to take Advil because I knew that I was going to be in pain from all of the picks that I was going to have to run through. You imagine running through 6'10". Dale Davis, 6'10", Antonio Davis. Then you got 7'4", Rick Schmitz. Mm-hmm. All of them setting picks by Reggie Miller. And Reggie used to run through all those picks all night long.
Yeah, and the thing is, Reggie was tall, too.
He's 6'7".
You had to elevate to try and get up there in a
6'7", one of the best shooters of all time. Now, number three, Grant Hill.
Wow.
Grant Hill, man. At 6'8".
Pre-injury
Grant Hill. Yeah. I mean, he could handle the basketball. Had one of the best crossovers that I've ever played against. And you know, everybody looks at Grant Hill. He looks like a quiet boy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really a quiet boy on that court, man. He's strictly a dog. Number two.
Okay.
This is going to surprise you.
Well, yeah. So Michael's two?
Michael is number two.
Oh, blasphemer.
Michael Jordan is number two.
All right.
Michael Jordan is number two.
Who the hell could be?
Must have had some good nights against Michael then. You must have had some success.
I had some success against Michael. Yeah. I mean, I used to relish playing against him, you know, but Michael was still tough. I mean, it's a couple times I held him to 53. You know, he got like 53 on me, but still, you know, I gave a good effort. Now, his number one, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
Wow.
Really?
Is the toughest guy I've ever had to guard.
The former Chris Jackson.
The former Chris Jackson.
Loved his game.
When we went down to LSU in 1989, final 4 year, flying a line. Now, you know, we were pretty stacked.
Yes.
That's a pretty good team.
When we playing at LSU, I remember I drew the assignment first on Chris Jackson. He's coming down court at the jump ball. They win the jump ball. He's coming down, and I see him in front of me. All of a sudden, I hear the crowd cheer. He had already scored. I didn't even see him score. That's how good he was.
Okay, compare him to Trae Young.
He's better than Trae Young.
Okay, better than Trae Young, but similar? I mean, because
so he didn't shoot the ball as deep as Trae Young, but his handle was better than Trae Young.
I wouldn't have gotten that in a million years, Kendall.
I wouldn't have guessed it either. But now I remember the feeling of watching him. There was nobody like him at that time because he was so fast and so smooth and got to any spot he wanted to with ease.
He could get anywhere he wanted to. His you couldn't see his offense. That's why I couldn't see the basket that he scored when all of the LSU fans
was his coach at LSU. Dale Brown.
Dale Brown.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was a good team.
And then they had Stanley Roberts and Shaquille O'Neal. How did they not win a national championship?
I know.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's
But,
crazy.
You know, it's you played in the Big Three, right? Yeah. The league for former NBAers. Mahmoud is still killing
He's still killing guys.
At what, age 49?
Yeah, at age 49.
Age 49, gray hair, just able to get wherever he wants and still score
using,
on anybody.
Still using the same moves, man.
Unbelievable. All right, that was fun.
That's a great list.
That's a hell of a list from Kendall Gill. It is 670 The Score. McNeil and Parkins show right here. We got to talk about how it would feel as a professional athlete to deal with cheating on the level that we are seeing right now in a different sport. I want to talk about that with Kendall. And you mentioned the Flying Illini. I need Flying Illini stories. I need them bad. We'll get that, and we'll talk NBA All-Star Game and some Bulls next hour right here on 670 The Score. Bottom of the hour was brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota. Single-game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. And the opening bell is brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto. Get a full-service oil change for $18.99 at CarX Tire and Auto. One more hour of McNeil and Parkins with Spiegel, Haw, and Kendall Gill on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.